This is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash. Later on, how new Biden Board of Measures focus on limiting asylum and ignoring root causes. While the Biden administration says get back, immigrant rights activists say push back.
Would I harbor you? Would you harbor me? Would I harbor you? Would you harbor a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, a heretic, convict, or spy? Would you harbor a runaway woman or child, a poet, a prophet, a king? Would you harbor an exile or a refugee, a person living with AIDS? Would you harbor a Tubman, a Garrett, a truth, a fugitive, or a slave?
I strongly advise you to go online or pick up the album, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and listen to the complete rendition of Will You Harbor Me?
We begin our coverage of this important issue with a news clip on recent U.S. immigration policy.
The White House today unveiled a new immigration plan that will increase expulsions at the U.S.-Mexico border. The plan cracks down on those who enter the country illegally, but also allows 30,000 migrants from Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Haiti to enter the country each month as part of a humanitarian parole program. The president and his Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, spoke today.
The actions we're announcing today will make things better. But will not fix the border problem completely. There's more that has to be done.
If individuals from these countries attempt to cross the U.S. border without authorization or the Mexico or Panama borders, after today, they will not be eligible for this new legal pathway. So the message is clear. Individuals should stay where they are and apply for these processes from there.
Joining me now is Krish Omara Vignaraja, President and CEO of the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. Krish, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. As you well know, the Biden administration is grappling with record numbers at the U.S. southern border. You heard President Biden say these actions will make it better. Do you agree?
It's a mixed bag. Expanding pathways at a time of unprecedented global need is certainly a worthwhile effort, so we're grateful to see the expanded use of humanitarian parole. But we can't crack open a window as we're slamming the door. And that's what today's announcement feels like. Because, yes, the administration is allowing a very limited number of Nicaraguans, Haitians, and Cubans to apply for humanitarian parole. But it's also as the White House expands the use of the Trump-era Title 42, and migrants from these three countries would face immediate expulsion.
That Title 42 is something they have been trying to end, right? But they have been forced to keep it in place under a Supreme Court ruling. So what do you suggest they do? They can't defy the Supreme Court, right?
That's right. But it does feel disjointed. Whether you compare what President Biden said as a candidate versus what he's done as president, or even the fact that at the time when the administration is fighting Title 42's use in court, they're also expanding it. We saw it in the announcement with Venezuelans and then in today's announcement. Our point is, look, we have a refugee resettlement system. Humanitarian parole is a temporary band-aid. These are both under the president and the president's power, and he should be implementing them. But we can't see a purported public health rule that the administration doesn't back being expanded. And that's what the administration did today.
If you step back from these specific actions and even just looking at it through the lens of what happens at the border, immigration more broadly, this was the president's really first big speech on this major topic. And when you mentioned some of the promises he made as a candidate, when you look at what's been done so far by the administration, how well has the administration lived up to some of those promises?
We've been really grateful for the administration's global humanitarian leadership when it has come to resettling Afghans, the Ukrainian refugee crisis. But the truth is, in terms of actually meeting their pledge, I think there's still room for improvement. Even in this announcement, you know, first the administration had a message of don't come to migrants. This seems like the 2.0 version, which is the carrot and stick approach. But that approach really only works when people have a choice to choose the carrot before they face the stick. And I think that there are some parts of the announcement today that are not tethered in reality. We're talking about migrants who are fleeing for their lives. And so the idea of having an orderly process, yes, of course, there are, you know, immigration organizations like us that stand by the need to create pathways, but we can't create systems that no one can access, and that's my fear.
Everyone agrees, Krish, that the immigration system is antiquated and it is broken, and it will require congressional action to really fix it in a meaningful way. So from the administration's perspective, I guess when you look at what President Biden could do immediately, given his own power, what could they do? What else could they be doing right now to try to alleviate some of the pressure?
You know, there's announcements and there's execution. So today's announcement, for example, the White House indicated that they will increase the ceiling of refugees that can be admitted to 20,000. But both this year and last year, the White House has only been able to resettle a maximum of 2,500. So that's just an example of, does the administration prioritize the rebuilding or the building of the infrastructure? Do they want to work to create pathways that are permanent instead of the temporary band-aids, which have been humanitarian parole? And do we want to have a system that doesn't just privilege certain nationalities or privilege people who have a U.S. sponsor? Or do we want to make sure that people who are fleeing for their lives because of war, violence, persecution, have access to asylum, which is protected under U.S. and international law? And so our point is that, yes, we need to create these pathways, but we also have to allow for people who are fleeing for their lives. We're talking about women, families, children who are coming to our border. They can't be summarily expelled. And so we believe that America's a nation great enough that we can walk and chew gum.
Immigration is certainly something we're going to be hearing a lot more about, especially as the president makes a trip there this weekend. That is Krish Omara-Vignaraja, president and CEO of the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Immigration is not a border crisis. It's an imperialism crisis, a climate crisis, a trade crisis. We're joined by Oscar Chacon, co-founder and executive director of Alianza Americas, to discuss the real crisis of U.S. governmental policies and practice to deter, prevent, and other punitive measures directed against migrants seeking asylum.
Yes. Oscar Chacon, it's great to have you with us. And you know, Oscar is a major human rights activist. And today in particular, human rights activists have condemned Biden's new enforcement plan as a humanitarian disgrace. So the real question is, Oscar Chacon, your thoughts and your concerns about the photo op and what was part of it in terms of the policies and practices that are becoming increasingly punitive for those seeking asylum. And thank you for the work you do and for joining us.
First of all, thank you both, Mimi and Ken. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's clearly going to be a one more challenging year for those of us concerned, you know, with the well-being of everyone, but particularly those who are consistently mistreated, who are consistently rejected, ignored, left behind. And so we need to arm ourselves, you know, with great courage and patience to continue the struggle for justice for however long it takes. To your question, the announcement last week by the Biden administration represents indeed a significant backtracking on international human responsibility, human rights responsibility on the part of the U.S. government. And I have to say that as much as I wish, you know, that this is simply a continuation of policies that were ironically put into effect by no other than Donald Trump, in reality, these are policies that have been very much part of Republican and Democratic administrations for a number of years by now. And these policies are largely inspired by ideologues who believe that immigration and immigrants are simply something bad that we should avoid at all costs, and that in particular, people from Mexico, Central American, Caribbean, Asian countries are basically garbage that we should just dump anywhere we can except letting them settle in the U.S. I mean, this is the type of people who really manufacture the narrative that suggests that today's immigrants and immigration is bad, very much defying evidence, you know, because the evidence shows exactly the opposite. But what these policies really will do is continue to bring harm and to bring difficulty, hardship to people who are desperately seeking a place where they can find support and protection. Let me remind you that the policy announced last week, it has, at the level of intention, something that one would agree is positive, and it is the idea that we should create avenues that are available to people to be able to do exactly what they've been doing in the only way available, which is to come to the U.S. without visas, because they would never be able to get a visa in a U.S. consulate abroad. And they should be able to do so without confronting all the difficulties that they've been confronting forever. And also, it is important to say that these policies, in many ways, even though they look humanitarian, at least in intention, the result will be that more people will be immediately returned to Mexico or returned to their own home countries, because keep in mind that the U.S. government has bilateral agreements with many nations in the hemisphere that allows the U.S. government to immediately deport people back to their own countries. But in the event where those agreements are not in place, they will actually send, has agreed for all practical purposes, to take people that the U.S. is sending back in an expeditious manner back to, in this case, as I said, I mean Mexico, because they cannot send them back to Venezuela or Nicaragua or Cuba. And so, again, I mean, it is a very sad reality that we are embracing policies that were put in place by the Trump administration, specifically Title 42, a health-connected concern from way back in the 1960s. And they are basically embracing it and continuing. And that is really sad for anybody truly concerned with the right for people to pursue asylum when they've been forced to leave their countries in search of a safe place for them and their families.
Oscar, could you go into more detail into the new proposals by Biden with regard to asylum in the U.S. that he enunciated in the statement last week? It's kind of confusing the way he says it. It almost sounds as if it's good, but what exactly is he talking about? He talks about 30,000 coming in, but on certain conditions, and 30,000 going out.
Kind of one step forward, two steps back.
Well, let me put it in context. 30,000 humanitarian visas, otherwise known as humanitarian parole visas, is only a fraction of all the people who over the past couple of years have been trying, you know, to come to the U.S. and do something that is absolutely right, which is to apply for asylum because they feel threatened in their own countries, and that's why they come to the only place, for better or for worse, that they believe will offer them the possibility to find the level of support and protection they need. The reality is that there are many conditions behind these 30,000 per month visas. Specifically, the difficulty is that for somebody to be able to pursue one of these visas, they have to have a sponsor already in the U.S. willing to assume responsibility for their coming into the country and providing all the support that they need. They also have to do so by providing documentation such as passports, which are not always available to people that run out of their countries without having necessarily planned to do so. And so if they've been in a country already other than the U.S. Strait, they will not be able to pursue these humanitarian visas. And if they do come to the U.S. without having requested a visa as part of these 30,000 per month that the administration is, at least as a matter of promise, making available, they will be apprehended and they will be sent back immediately, either to the country they came from when there are bilateral agreements for deportation purposes, or they will be sent to Mexico, which, as I said before, has unfortunately agreed to become the executor, if you want, of U.S. policies in violation of many of the things that back in the days of the electoral campaign by Andrés Manuel López Obrador, he actually spoke very well about the importance of providing protection to people seeking support and protection as opposed to simply treating them as if they are some type of criminal. But sadly, you know, that is the reality we are going through these days. And clearly, I mean, this is violation of international standards because applying for asylum upon arrival to a country is the way that historically people has actually done it. And I think it is also important for listeners to know that the vast majority of people in countries like Venezuela, like Nicaragua, without mentioning Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, they would much more prefer to be in their countries and stay in their countries. And the only reason they venture to take the difficult trail to come to the U.S. without visas is because they have no other option. And they are indeed a minority of people compared to the numbers of people who continue to reside in spite of all odds in their respective nation.
So, Oscar Chacon, co-founder, executive director of Alianza Americas, how do you respond to peoples who have been enculturated with, the crisis is on the border. The crisis is on the border. There's a crisis of resources. What is a poor country to do, a poor country, i.e. the U.S.? Nevertheless, we opened up by saying, wait a minute, the crisis is not on the border. The crisis is a crisis of imperialism, a crisis of climate, a crisis of trade. Your thoughts and your response to buying into the idea that there's a resource crisis that necessitates turning people back and completely turning aside the responsibility, the issue of the root causes, many of which are furthered, if not precipitated, by the foreign policy of the U.S.?
Well, I mean, I think that you are absolutely correct that what we are seeing is ultimately the consequence of a series of broken promises and broken policies in each of the country of origins of the people who are coming to the U.S. That is really what's behind the significant numbers of people that we have seen on the move, not only in the Americas, but throughout the world. People have short memories. Now, let's keep in mind that we are only barely 2.5 years away from the beginning of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, which has brought devastating effects, you know, not only to rich countries like the U.S., but also to countries that are struggling to come forward, particularly in Latin America and the Caribbean. These nations have endured difficulties far worse, you know, than we have in the U.S. Tens of millions of jobs vanished during the pandemic, and they have not really recovered. So again, I mean, this is only the latest example of a series of situations largely created by the U.S. and its policies and largely supported by U.S. Backed institutions like the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, very often the Inter-American Development Bank. So these are clearly, you know, the factors behind forced migration that we are seeing nowadays, which is indeed larger than we've seen over the past several years, but not historically unprecedented. If you go back the last 40 years, we have had a number of moments where the number of people arriving to the U.S. border has increased significantly. So clearly, the issue is not necessarily a border crisis as much as it is a crisis in the countries, you know, where these people reside and where situations surrounding them has forced them to come out of their countries because they have no other choice. And I think it is important also to bring light to the fact that the idea that is often presented in U.S. media outlets is that these people are coming essentially to take advantage of the U.S. and to use resources that they should not be even seeking because they're not allowed or entitled to be coming to the U.S. and seeking support. Part of the problem that I see nowadays is that the United States of America itself has undergone a very gradual but consistent process of making life for a lot of people more and more precarious. And as life for many people, especially low-income communities, ethnic, racial, minority communities in the U.S., to the extent that their life has become more difficult, people are more likely to believe, because they are already in a scarcity state of mind, they are more likely to believe that these newcomers will be a burden for the country. Again, you know, I think it's important to remember the evidence behind the actual effect on the country by migration and immigrants is vastly positive in multiple ways, but especially positive from the point of view of wealth generation and wealth accumulation, something that we absolutely criticize. But immigrants have been important to contribute to this particular reality that, again, affect not only immigrants, but affect people, especially low-income populations in the U.S. And I think it's important to understand that the difficulties immigrants and asylum seekers are battling against are very much the same difficulties that a lot of low-income communities in the U.S. are also battling against. And if anything, we should be working much more closely together and not allowing people responsible for our difficulties to divide us.
Oscar, in the first year of Biden's presidency, Kamala Harris went to Central America, and as a result of that came back with certain reforms which would try to change the way Central America does business and the way the U.S. relates to Central America. Give us your views on what needs to be done with regard to the point of origin so people wouldn't be leaving their home countries.
Sure. Well, first of all, let me say that part of the problem with the U.S. approach to so-called root causes of migration is to believe that the problem is so simple that it will be resolved if we manage to bring in more direct foreign investment into these countries. That's what the U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris has been trying to do, to persuade more U.S. corporations to make a commitment over a long period of time, because it's not a commitment over the next 6, 12, or 18 months. It's a commitment over the next 10 years to invest more money in Central American countries. But let me be very straightforward. Just pumping in more money in the form of direct foreign investment to support an economic system that is rotten from the core is not going to help. It's not going to solve the problem. We need to understand that the type of change that is necessary is one that acknowledges the failure of existing economic, social, cultural policies in these countries, and the fact that the United States government has consistently been working with the wrong partners in as far as changing realities that have been forever exclusionary, forever classist in their approach. And unless we are able to recognize the deepness of the change that is necessary, we may well continue to pump more money into these countries, but it will go to nowhere. It will basically be doing more of what has already been done for decades, and no change will come about. I mean, I really believe that the core of the changes that need to take place are primarily in the economic arena. We need to recognize that the economic elites in these countries are very much predatory. You know, even U.S. government officials have actually used these very words that I just used to describe the role of economic oligarchies in these countries, that historically have never really cared about building a reality of well-being for the majority of their population. So, again, we need to recognize that that is at the core of the very capitalist policies that have been put in place and that continue to be promoted as the solution. The second thing that we need to do, absolutely, is also recognize that there is a crisis in democratic governance in Central America, in the Caribbean, in South America. We all saw what happened yesterday in Brazil. I mean, it's just the latest example of the many difficulties that we are finding when it comes to democratic governance in Latin America. Unless we recognize that if we are not able to really bring about democracies that really function and democracies that really produce well-being for people, we will continue to, again, you know, pursue the wrong priorities, and we will continue to pour money into operations and activities that simply will make the problem we already have to be continued. And so that is the essence of what is wrong and what we need to actually dare to change.
And, of course, we haven't even looked at Haitian and African immigrants and the whole policy and practice and ideology of white supremacy, which stokes the base here to bring into power right-wing populists or neo-fascists. So we've got a lot more to talk about, and we've got to have Oscar Chacon back much more frequently. And we really need policies that demonstrate, as Oscar has said, the incredible benefits to our communities from immigrant populations. We need policies that recognize them as powerful agents of good, not policies of deterrence and expulsion like Title 42. You're going to come back, right, and continue to talk to us as we explore these issues, which are going to be heating up for the cannon fodder, really, of the political right. And
happy
for that matter, for the Democrats. Great. Oscar Chacon, thank you for all that you do. We've been speaking with Oscar Chacon, who is the co-founder and executive director of Alianza Americas. You can find their website. It's chock full of material so that we can do better educating, agitating, and organizing to support immigrants and for asylum. Thank you, Oscar. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we're Building Bridges.